The following is part three in a four-part series here on Tales from the South.
This is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
How's everybody doing tonight? Woo! Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, a good crowd out there. So, we've got, and I hope you all enjoyed the Salty Dogs before we got up here. How about the Salty Dogs? Yeah! Well, if you want to listen to more of that salty, salty music, check out thesaltydogs.net. Okay, you can find more of their music there, thesaltydogs.net. So, welcome to a very special Tales from the South. This is their Out Loud storytelling show where LGBT Southerners and allies bring their own true stories to life. We are on location at South on Main in Little Rock, Arkansas. The Tales from the South is presented by the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops, and tonight's show is sponsored by HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, and Yellow Rocket Concepts. Yes, come on. Thank you to our sponsors, and I will be your guest MC, Tracy Berry. So for those of you out there listening and all those other places, Paula is still with us. I did not kidnap her and shoo her away. She's in the building. On my left here, playing for us tonight is blues guitarist Mark Simpsons. Playing the blues. Thank you, Mark. And on our backdrop here, our set, we have the work of V.L. Cox. V.L. Cox is a passionate advocate for justice. She feels that despite our differences such as cultural, religious, economic, race, or gender, we can choose a peaceful path of tolerance and justice instead of fear, repression, and hatred, using historical elements of the past in projects based on culture and social change. The images in VL's projects visually engage the observer and become a focal point for discussion. So if you want to check out more works from VL, go to www.greatfineart.com. All right, so enough of that business. Are you ready to hear some stories? Yeah, let's give it up. So, all the stories tonight are true and told by Southerners who have lived them. So to go ahead and kick us off, we have Patricia Dawson.
This is about family. I was born the fifth child of six boys to a very conservative Christian family. It was very tough growing up in that household. Very confusing. At an age of about six, I knew that I was different. It just, something didn't feel right. I was jealous of all the girls that I knew, how pretty they were, how they got to be themselves. No one ever talked them down for being happy and doing what they wanted. And I wanted that. I wanted to be a girl so bad. But being raised in that household, any vestige of non-manliness was shamed out of you. I remember terms as a child that I would hear often were, don't be a sissy, be a man, and if you dared cry, was, would you like me to give you something to cry about? Growing up in the church was even more difficult because laying in my bed at night, I prayed to God, please make me a girl. I'm miserable. That's all I want. And after a long time of no answer, I prayed, just take this desire from me. You know, make me happy with who I am. Didn't get much of an answer on that one either. So continuing on, in my years growing up through my teenage and young adult years, I dated women and nothing else because that was what was expected of me. I graduated college in the late 80s, and I moved to Dallas. At that time, being away from my family, I was opened up to a new world, possibilities that I never knew possible. I met a young man named Bruce, a gay male, who opened my eyes to something that I was missing in my life, but something still wasn't quite right. He took me to my first drag show, and I remember Bruce saying, "I don't understand them. Why can't they just be gay?" I didn't have an answer for him. All I knew is I wanted to be one of them. I was like, oh my gosh, here is the possibility that I've always longed for in my life. I knew that the realization, the first time I ever heard the term transsexual was that evening, and I was like, oh my God, here it is. I can do this. I lost touch with Bruce, and I was too scared to turn my life upside down and become who I needed to be. Several years later, I popped in and out of between the gay and the straight world, and always had this severe self-hate every time I sought the touch of a man. Total, complete self-loathing. After a few years, I managed to marry a woman and have a child, but I was unhappy and still miserable. I came out to her a couple years after our marriage and was subsequently kicked out of the house. I was brought back about a month later, and things were very iffy. My parents found out and made a mad dash to Austin, Texas, because that's where I was living at that time. They came down and put me under a lot of pressure, letting me know that I would not be accepted. My mother pleaded with me and said, "Do not destroy my son." And under the weight of my mother's tears, I collapsed and I gave in to them. They went back home happy, and I was pretty dejected and hurt. For several years, I bounced in and out of cross-dressing and was never happy. In 2008, I made a decision to come back home to Arkansas. I wanted to be away from Austin, away from the one place that I lived for a very short time, happy with myself, the memories I had to get away from. I wanted to get back to Arkansas in a place where it was not accepted, to be around family, in a place where my transition would not be tolerated. And see how well that worked. Coming out here in Arkansas was very different and difficult. I was dating a girl right before coming out. Her name was Jeannie Rains. She was my best ally, but she didn't know it at the time. She knew something was wrong, and even though we loved each other, she was getting ready to split with me because I was just a basket case. I wound up coming out to her, and at that time, she was elated. She's like, "My God, why didn't you just tell me?" And like I said, she became my greatest ally, and she helped me through my transition and helped me to become the woman that I am. But family again. Her family accepted me and took me in as one of their own, where coming out to my own family for the second time was difficult. I remember talking to my father in 2012, and it went a lot better than I thought, because he told me things like, "I don't understand and I do not condone, but you're my child and I love you and I would never disown you." 2 weeks later, he and my mother put out the word to the entire family that I was to be disowned and all contacts to be cut. I wailed for hours and I cried rivers. It was a very difficult time. We all know that family is not always blood. Sometimes you find a new and better family. And I have discovered that. To all my trans brothers and sisters, I love you very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Patricia. Patricia is a native Arkansan transgender woman who came from a large conservative middle-class family. She is an accomplished mechanic and an electrician and loves to help others.
Tales from the South will return after this brief musical intermission.
Warning us all about the judgment day, telling us how rock and roll will never stay.
Next up on Tales from the South, we have James Rector.
If you could only sense how important you are to the lives of those you meet, how important you can be to the people who you may never even dream of, there is something of yourself that you leave at every meeting with another person. These words were said by a very, very wise man whom we all know, Mr. Rogers. This is one of my favorite quotes. And I tell you this quote because I wish I could say those words to one role model in my life who was an influence long before I ever knew I was being influenced. This story is actually not about that quote, though. It's actually about a quote that changed my life. It was a small high school in Oklahoma of about 400 people. My graduating class was 72. Like most small towns, everyone knew everyone's business. They knew when Mr. Dean was getting a new lawnmower or the pharmacist's wife was pregnant. And high school drama was the worst. I enjoyed my teenage years, though. I was known as a band nerd. But I also lived in fear every day besides that. I knew in high school that my attractions were much different than the other boys in my class, and that my secret was something I could never share. I didn't know a single person who was gay. I had no gay role models other than the flamboyant portrayals done in movies and television. Furthermore, I don't know if I really had a single role model in my life. So I remember sitting in my senior English class on that very first day, awaiting the impending doom of one Mrs. Fee, spelled F-E-E. The joke was you owed her a fee for surviving her class of your young teenage innocence. So let me give you just a quick description of Mrs. Fee. She was a woman of average height, short salt and pepper hair, very plain, large, thick-framed glasses that occupied half of her face. And the kicker? No one really knew how old she was. I remember looking through my uncle's yearbook. He graduated in the 70s. She looked exactly the same in 1999. So my head was filled with these horror stories from upperclassmen and my family members of the senior English teacher. I almost imagine the pointy hat, the green face, the witchy finger, and your little dog too. But then she entered the room. Everyone sat up a little straighter in their chair. Her eyes surveyed the room. Some people say she was stern, too harsh, assigned too much homework. But I would say she was disciplined, and she challenged us to strive for our highest. To me, she was pretty amazing. She had a story for every situation, and she inspired my love of reading. There's one exception. There was a 3-week period where she recorded 1984 in her first period class on a tape recorder and then played it back consecutively throughout the day. My English class was after lunch. Whew. There was something I took notice of with Mrs. Fee, though. She was unapologetically herself. Where some people stereotyped and wrote her off as a horrible person, she quickly became one of my favorite people. I can clearly remember that last day of my senior English class. I hung back after class to say my farewells. She gave me a hug, scribbled a note in my senior yearbook, and then looked at me and said the words, that quote that she said to me. I remember that specific quote years later, but at the time, I completely shrugged it off. Little did I know she was my role model. After graduation, I attended the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. I quickly fell in love with the state and the people, but I was still hiding that secret. I joined a fraternity. I created an exterior of being a masculine guy who dated girls, and for some reason I was okay with that perceived stereotype. At least that's what I would show the world. Yes. But deep down inside, I knew I was lying to myself. I tried to suppress admitting to myself that I was gay, but it was too much. I felt alone, unhappy. I remember it was a crisp fall day, and the smell of the harvest and campfire filled the chilled air. In a moment of introversion and general homesick feelings, I pulled out my senior yearbook. I skimmed through it, and I found the quote hidden among the many other notes jotted on the inside cover of my senior book by classmates. And I remember Mrs. Fee, who, despite how anyone stereotyped her, continued to be herself 100%. Little did I know that quote would ignite a change in me years later. Coming out as a gay man was hard, but it became easier with love and support of friends and family. My fraternity brothers stood by me, affirming that they liked me for who I was and not who I loved. However, I knew if I struggled with coming out, so did many others, which ultimately inspired me to speak out, to take action, to find ways to become a leader in the community, a voice for those that did not have a voice. I now have the privilege standing in front of you that I am very grateful to be the field organizer for the Human Rights Campaign Arkansas. My goal is clear: to empower others, individuals, community organizations, and communities to fight for equal rights. I know in my heart that Mrs. Fee was an ally who was wise. And when I didn't believe in myself and I doubted my abilities, she was the one person who saw something in me that I didn't. That quote, "One day you will be a great leader in your community."
Thank you, James. He served for 3 years as president of the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality. Before becoming the community organizer for HRC Arkansas, he hopes to advance the protections for LGBT people, specifically youth, while collaborating with local organizations and building strong volunteer teams in the natural state. Yes. Thank you, James. All right. How about all of the 10 storytellers that we had tonight? Yeah. Yeah, they did a great job. Thank you guys so much. So real quick, thank you to all of our writers, all of our storytellers. Thank you to our live audience, all of you guys. Thank you to South on Main for hosting us tonight. And thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops, and tonight's show is sponsored again by the Human Rights Campaign, HRC, and Yellow Rocket Concepts. Additional support provided by UALR's School of Mass Communications, the Writers' Colony at Derry Hollow, Little Rock Soiree Magazine, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Arkansas Arts Council, and Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us, Tales from the South, on Facebook, Twitter, and Stitcher, Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. We are open for submissions from all Southerners, and more can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Thank you guys so much for being here tonight. Thank you for your support. It means so much to our community. Please keep doing what you're doing. Have a good night.
Out Loud Storytelling was conceived, produced, and directed by Hillary Trudell. Ms. Trudell is a longtime ally who believes in the power of story to create positive social change. She currently resides in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Writer accommodations for Tales from the South provided by Robinwood Bed and Breakfast in Little Rock. More at robinwoodbnb.com. And the Baker House Bed and Breakfast in North Little Rock. More at bakerhousenlr.com. Live sound and studio assistance provided by the UALR School of Mass Communication. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can all be found on our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for keeping the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.
That must be jelly, 'cause jam don't shake like that. That must be jelly, 'cause jam don't shake like that. And she's looking mighty fine, she's dancing in a cowboy hat. Well, she piles her hair up high and she shimmies down low. And she piles her hair up high and she shimmies down low. And she's looking mighty fine and she's red up the ribbon and go, go, go. She's a cat's meow,
she's a cat's meow.
Dogs growl wild,
dog wild.
She's everything that a country boy would need. And look here, boy, she's a staring back at me. Playing the Walmart towel, Bart Angel.